of the Liberated Voices podcast. We're also joined by Brother Ibrahim Abul Asad. Ibrahim is a UK-based Palestinian researcher, photojournalist, and activist. Assalamu alaikum to you both. Thank you so much for joining us on Eye on Islam. Sister Fatima, if I could begin with you, what has been your experience of the Muslim reaction in the UK, particularly to the ongoing genocide in Gaza?
Well, as we know that this didn't start on October 7th, there has been a huge shift in attitudes, particularly within the Muslim communities. I think it's clear to see that instead of it being seen as more of a political issue, it's now become one that is seen as humanitarian, as it should be, especially with the lead up to, you know, and now, alhamdulillah, we are in Shahr Ramadan. It's become more mainstream within the Muslim community, as it should be. There is still a lot more that could be done.
Absolutely. Ibrahim, there is a lot of variety in the actions to be taken. We've seen, you know, from cultural events to boycott campaigns. In your opinion, what are the most effective ways to campaign against the Zionist regime during this holy month?
First and foremost, I'd like to say happy Ramadan. To answer bluntly, to mobilise and campaign outside these arms factories that make the weapons that are used to kill Palestinians as well as many oppressed people across the global south. And as well, not just these arms factories, but to apply pressure upon all the pressure points that Zionism has here in the UK. Now, what is that? Universities. They have a substantial amount of deals with companies that create weapons as well as components or have different types of investments in occupied Palestine. So what we really need to do now is up our level, up our game when it comes to applying pressure upon these pressure points, upon these institutions that are Zionist, that work towards Israel's effort to occupy, Israel's effort to kill, Israel's effort to displace, Israel's effort to maim Palestinians from the river to the sea.
I mean, just quickly, you mentioned, obviously, universities. What could some students do? Let's say there are students watching this. What are some effective things that maybe they could do on their campuses?
Well, not just students, but everybody needs to know the political climate that we need to operate in. Now, it being students, we need to know what is a Zionist organization, what are Zionist organizations that are present at campus, on campus. And one organization that every single student and pro-Palestinian advocate needs to know about is the UJS, the Union of Jewish Students, that works towards demonizing and in an effort criminalizing Palestinians as well as students that are literally advocating for the right belonging to the Palestinian people. Very important point is that Nina Friedman, who was the former UJS president, has spoken on video at an event full of UJS alumni. She clearly says, not my words, Nina Friedman's words, that the UJS alumni have members in the Israeli military, the Israeli political office, different bureaucracies within Israel. So how is the UJS not clearly an extension of Zionism here in the UK? Students need to know who the UJS is. Anytime that you see a UJS event, you go to your local PALSOC, you inform them. You go to PALSOC such as that you see in SOAS University, that you see in UCL, as well as that you see in countless other London-based universities and non-London-based universities, and demand that any event organised by the UJS or Zionist organisations should not be held on our campus.
No, absolutely. And Fatima, I would say, just before we, you know, move on to some of the spiritual dimensions, do you think Muslims have been doing enough? I mean, do you think that as a community in general, we see the young generally are more maybe mobilised and active and on campuses and doing stuff. Do you think maybe we could be doing more?
Absolutely, you should be doing more. Especially as a student, you've got that position where you can be doing more. Within universities, there is so much opportunity to stand up, especially because these are the institutions that are complicit, you know. And essentially, you're paying the university, and the university is paying to kill. So, absolutely, you should be doing more. The students should be standing up, not just in the ways previously discussed, but there's this campaign of silencing going on. Wearing even the Palestinian badge or having any sort of political standpoint can be demonised, although it's not legal.
Yeah.
So that's where you need to understand that if it's not illegal,
Don't be intimidated and do it. And I guess, you know, we've spoken already about some of the physical, material actions that we can take. What are some of the spiritual actions or some spiritual dimensions to this struggle that Muslims can engage in specifically during Shahr Ramadan?
Absolutely. So as we've seen in Rafah, the children, they look up to the sky and they don't know whether it's dinner or death.
Yeah. Right?
It's a devastating situation. And so when we are fasting, usually we think, okay, we are doing this for patience, we are doing this to have sabr, to find that inner peace. These Palestinian children, they've been doing it for months now.
Yeah.
And if we can't empathize with them, not just on a material level, but on a spiritual level, then what are we doing? We need to look within us, and as we are fasting, we need to find that spiritual side within us that empathizes with these kids in Gaza,
yeah,
that empathizes with the struggles that these people can't have a break from. There is no iftar. There is nothing, I mean, grinding up animal feed, subhanAllah, and here we are thinking that we might have dates from Israel, and who cares?
Yeah.
It's horrendous. So when you're doing your zikr, when you're doing your fast, when you're going about your daily life and you think, oh, I'm hungry, oh, I feel thirsty, find that part of you that connects with the rest of the ummah on a spiritual level.
Yeah. And quickly, Ibrahim, do you think that we, as Muslims, sometimes underestimate the power of da'a? Like, you know, maybe some people say, oh, pray for the people of Palestine. But actually, it's the weapon of the believer, as far as we understand.
100%. As much as we must always pray for the people of Palestine, we should also must make an act of duty in, for example, making sure that we are not breaking our fast on Israeli-produced dates that was produced on stolen Palestinian land. Yeah. Of course, we should always pray for the people of Gaza, but we should also make sure that we are not...
That
our actions are in line with our prayer.
Yeah, exactly.
And they don't contradict, because quite frankly, it's very bittersweet.
Mm.
Very bittersweet that we're breaking and we're surrounding by our loved members, our family members, while Palestinians are surrounded by the rubble of their homes, eating animal feed, breathing in white phosphorus for breakfast. It's disgusting, and quite frankly, it's harrowing. And I think what we saw recently, seeing a mosque in London invite genocide enabler Rishi Sunak, in my opinion, is quite disgusting. Because I don't think any individual that has advocated for the killing of any people, regardless of their religion or regardless of their race or creed, for profit...
should be welcome anyway. Yeah.
Whether it be this room, my house, your house, my religious centre or your religious centre.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, absolutely. Thank you. Now, with the large-scale crackdown, as we've mentioned, touched on student action on campuses across the UK, Ayan Islam attended a pro-Palestine fundraising event at a London university and heard from the students directly as to why they planned this action, specifically during the holy month of Ramadan.
In my opinion, being proactive and standing for justice, is inherently Islamic. And so I think it's something that we actually need to do. With regard to it being public or private, I think what we're doing here today isn't necessarily something that you need to be a Muslim to do. Even though we said it's inherently Islamic, if people differ to that, then you can turn around and say, well, look, this is a humanitarian cause. And I don't think anyone has any valid basis to use how public or private their religious beliefs are to stand with what's right.
I'm first year law student. I'm also president of the SJP Society, Students for Justice in Palestine. And we're here today because we've seen that individual efforts aren't enough. We need more combined efforts. So that's why we've come, we've like coalitioned with different societies, and we're trying to make like a big scene here so that we can really get our message across. We've tried our best to communicate with the university, express how unhappy we've been that they've been neglecting the issue of Palestine. They haven't shown enough attention to it. They haven't respected our requests. We've asked them to raise the flag like they do for other causes. They haven't respected our request, basically. So we're going to try our best to put on a scene here and display the flag everywhere possible and keep chanting Free Palestine.
We feel to a point pushed to have to do something. There's now a coalition of societies. It started off as two or three societies, but we're now, I think, 15 or 16 societies in total have come together. So it's clearly something which is supported by a very broad and large element of the student base. And there's even academic staff, members of staff, who have voiced their solidarity with the cause as well, and the fact that they want to see things that are different. But we've heard they've been outright scared to do so. One member of staff earlier today came and slapped this on the wall, and actually told us, you know, we had a conversation with him afterwards. He was genuinely scared. He was trying to conceal his identity. And he was a Jewish member of staff, which goes to show that this isn't, you know, just a Muslim cause. It's a global cause, it's a humanitarian cause, and I feel, like I said, when we started this, obligated to speak out. And I think most students are starting to see that as well.
Now, Fatima, we just saw some footage from an event there at a London university, and I think one of the things that came through from that event is attempts to intimidate students on campus, to maybe make them feel like they could be harmed in their studying or their prospects, or some kind of consequences could come upon them. What advice would you have to particularly the younger students in terms of how to face down these attempts at intimidation, whether it be by extremists on campus, like Ibrahim was talking about, in the Union of Jewish Students, or even members of staff?
Of course. Well, first of all, well done to those students that put that action in place. That is what we need. You cannot feel intimidated by these people because they have no backing. There is no ground for them to stand on, essentially. For the younger students in particular, you've just now entered into a space where you've found this newfound power. And you need to recognise that as a student. A lot of student activism is undermined, but actually it plays a huge part in getting things done, in changing the way people see things, even in legislation. So it is so important that as a younger student, look to those that are older than you in perhaps higher years or even alumni, and see how they've interacted with the difficulties they faced. Because this isn't something new. We know that this issue has been ongoing. So there are sources and resources out there where you can look to, and you should find power and solidarity with the students that you're with, because now you're no longer just one, you're part of a bigger whole.
Yeah, you've got the critical mass.
Just to add on that note, I think to the students that are watching, to one organisation and one movement definitely worth following, and also asking for assistance if you do feel any trouble on campus, is YFFP, Youth Front for Palestine, based in the north of England, in Manchester, as well as PYM Britain, that is based in London. Because they are youth-led, they themselves have gone through many of these very similar experiences on the back of the UJS's efforts to demonise and criminalise anything of anybody calling for the rights belonging to the Palestinian people. So that organisation and the Palestinian youth movement are amazing avenues to get in contact with if you are experiencing any form of trouble on campus and you need to speak to somebody more experienced that can help alleviate the situation.
Sorry, on that note, I think it's really important, actually, that students remember that they do have their rights. And as Ibrahim was saying, it is so important that you are educated in that sense. Mm. So when you are holding these actions, don't be intimidated because you have rights. So make sure you know them and therefore can use them.
Yes. Sure. And Ibrahim, I would want to come back to the question of Shahr Ramadan, and in terms of religiosity. What would you say to those who say that actually people or Muslims shouldn't be concerning themselves with political matters in general, or even during this special time of the year?
Then I think it contradicts a lot of my own personal beliefs, and as well as a lot of beliefs of the Muslim community, when we see injustices unfolding across the world. I think I myself as a human being, I myself as a Muslim, I myself as Ibrahim, cannot just sit there and continue to digest my food while a Palestinian boy is starving and has been starving for over 150 days and looks to the sky and doesn't know whether there's food coming from the above or if it's a bomb raining to steal the life of his mother, his brother, his sister, as well as his father. I think it's shameful. I think shameful. Yeah. Nothing. No other words to put in between. I think there's much more that Muslims themselves, as well as the Muslim community are amazing in terms of what they have done for Palestine, yeah. as well as we need to take it many more steps further.
Sister Fatima, we've seen many reports of the British government's attempts to try to redefine extremism in order to maybe try to tamp down support for Palestine amongst people in the UK, Muslims and non-Muslims who have come out to support Palestine. Do you think they'll be successful in their attempts?
They've tried, and they've tried again, and we're still on the streets. So whilst, yes, we can see they are having an impact, people are starting to understand that it doesn't matter what they say or how many times they try to redefine extremism or how much they try to broaden it or how much they try to snatch you into this loop or that loop or this label or whatever. What actually matters is whether you are able to continue going out. Mm. So as long as we have that right, and as long as this is a democratic country, you will have that right. So don't be intimidated. And, I mean, they'll keep trying. They won't stop. They won't relax. Mm. But neither will we.
Yeah. Do you think they'll be successful, Ibrahim? But also, do you think that it's a sign of their desperation that they're trying to crack down in this way, that they maybe are worried about how much the narrative has changed? And, you know, especially the young generation. I just want to take it very quickly somewhere else. In America, there's a debate going on and expected to be passed very soon that TikTok will be banned.
Yes.
The main driving force of this, nothing to do, of course, with China, and everything to do with the fact that the ADL, yes. The Jewish Extremist Organization, is worried that the younger generation who get their news from TikTok are seeing things how they are. And do you think this is what's reflected in government policy here? They're so panicking, especially that younger people are not supporting Israel anymore, that they're trying to do all of this, ban protests and call people extremists to try to, because of how successful these actions have been.
100%. Just before starting off, I think the only extremist thing is what's coming out of the Cabinet Office and coming out of Rishi Sunak's mouth, the fact that he is supporting an entity that is committing genocide and actively spoke about their genocidal intent. So I think with the question regarding TikTok, it's a very interesting question because we no longer have two camps where it is the left and the right. Instead, it is the old and the young. Mm. And the old will soon die and the young continue to get old and the young have the dominant view that Palestine should be liberated from the river to the sea because they are seeing the injustices and their mind hasn't been tampered with institutionally by going through their ages of life. So I think that is very telling. I think what is very telling is the fact that protests, our right to protests, is what allowed us to have the establishment of the National Health Service here in this country. It was working class men going to go out to fight in World War II, coming back without a leg, without an arm, without any form of service, health-wise, taking to the streets, demanding their right. Given that I fought blood, sweat and tears for your country, the least you can do is accommodate me in terms of healthcare. That is how we had the NHS. That is the same people that Boris Johnson wanted us to clap for at 8 o'clock. And you are now saying that you want to strip our right from protesting when protesting literally gave something that this country regards itself as one of its greatest achievements, a national free health service. And just to conclude, I think we shouldn't get lost in everything that's been taking place post October the 7th, thinking that it's happening in a vacuum. Because just like how it didn't take place on October the 7th, their attempts to criminalise Palestinian activity across Western Europe did not take place post October the 7th. This has been an effort to criminalising our right to protest before last year, and we see it accelerated in places like Germany, where organisations are unable to receive state funding if they support BDS, and we're soon on the trajectory to see that happening here in the UK. So none of this should be seen to have happened in a vacuum, whether it be the events that led up to October the 7th or the events that led after October the 7th.
And just very finally, Fatima, maybe actually I want to pick up on that last point that Brother Ibrahim made about funding. So, you know, there are attempts, and there have been actually legislation passed in many states in the US where you wouldn't get access to, you know, funds and contracts or other access to public money if you support BDS or you're anti-Zionist. Isn't that a good thing, though? I mean, what we really want is our communities to be independent from the state, right, and not be reliant on the state. Because we've seen many of those who do take money from the state, you know, to promote narratives like Prevent and others, have actually been very compromised. So in the long term, isn't it good that people divorce themselves from being reliant on these, you know, kind of authoritarian Western regimes?
I think I want to just flip that on its head quickly, because the way we look at it is so important. When you are given money by the state doesn't give it to you without its you know, expectations.
Strings attached. Yeah, exactly.
So now Rishi's pledged, what, 117 million to the security of mosques and Muslim faith-based schools and whatever over the next 4 years. What does that come with? That's not just coming out of nowhere. There is a reason that it's coming out now, and there's a reason that it's this amount of money, and there's a reason that it's based to the Muslim community. When the Muslims have been vocal, now it's suddenly time to fund them, to silence them, essentially. When, you know, when we're all happy in our place, and the Muslim, you know, community is more worried about spiritual issues rather than perhaps current affairs, or the idea of, you know, Prevent is something to help us all and it's not biased or whatever. Well, when you're silent and you're already within their pocket, they don't need to buy you to put them in your, to put you in their pocket. Does that make sense? It's so important that not only are you scared, you shouldn't be scared of not receiving funding, you should be scared of receiving funding. Exactly,
which has been my position, because what are the strings that come attached with it? Thank you so much, Sister Fatima, and Brother Ibrahim as well, for your time and your excellent contributions. And thank you. You can join us again next week for another edition of Eye on Islam. Assalamu alaikum.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
الله يا الله سبحان الله. الله يا الله والحمد لله. الله ولا إله إلا الله. الله يا الله والله أكبر.
July 12, 1983. Place Hosseinia Jamaran, Tehran. Subject: Spiritual Purification and Focus on Spirituality. The ultimate perfection of human beings has been to know that they are helpless to understand that they are incapable of worshipping Allah. In the prostrate or sujood, you endorse His infallibility, and after prostration, you glorify Him and say takbir. Next, again, you say the glorification of takbir and prostrate in sujood and endorse His infallibility. All of these are in order to make you understand that the subject is far higher than this.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Dear audience, welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. On the subject of Persian New Year or Nowruz, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi said, "I am hopeful that God Almighty will make this year the year of mercy, blessings, purity, brotherhood, and equality, and that the entire nation and the government and all of the officials shall unite together and collectively lead this country toward prosperity and welfare, and succeed in fulfilling all the needs of the nation, and confront any kind of transgression, which are part and parcel of all revolutions." Well, here Imam Rahmatullah Alayhi is talking about the changes that a nation can go through in order to reach success. This statement is also a beneficent prayer for people in the beginning of the year, which is called Nowruz in Persian culture. The great Imam regularly gave congratulatory messages on an occasion of New Year and issued special advices on how to handle the country's affairs and matters. The great religious and spiritual leader sought a real change and transformation in the individual's lives during New Year due to its coincidence with spring and closely association with pleasant nature. Imam Rahmatullah Alayh also arranged circles and welcome meetings for the officials and people from various walks of life in the beginning days of each new year. He also put emphasis on reciting the special supplications and seeking God Almighty's assistance to overcome the material and spiritual troubles during the lifetime and the world hereafter. The great Imam maintained that spring was closely linked with the revival of nature and mankind, and societies could also take a new start and correct their behavior in lines with human and ethical values during this time. Thank you very much for listening to us. Until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
The Zionist regime genocide in Gaza will be remembered as the moral collapse of the West. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, "Now that some Western leaders have begun to feel increasingly uncomfortable as the enormity of the Gaza genocide unfolds, a few, though bashfully, are declaring that Netanyahu may be going too far. The Zionist regime's genocide in Gaza will be remembered as the moral collapse of the West. As soon as the Israeli regime war began following the Al-Aqsa flood operation on October 7th, every moral or legal frame of reference that Washington and its Western allies supposedly held dear was suddenly dropped. Western leaders rushed to Israel, one after the other, offering military, political, and intelligence support, along with a blank check to right-wing Zionist Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his generals to torment the Palestinians. The likes of the U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, went as far as joining the Zionist regime's first War Council meeting so that he could take part in the discussion which directly resulted in the Gaza genocide. He said on October 12th, "I come before you not only as the United States Secretary of State, but also as a Jew." The interpretation of these words is disturbing, no matter how it is spun. But it also ultimately means that Blinken has lost all credibility as an American, as a politician, or even as a fair-minded human being. His boss, President Joe Biden, as if in an infinite loop, has been, for years, repeating that you don't have to be a Jewish to be a Zionist. Indeed, he has lived up to his maximum, declaring time and again, "I am a Zionist." Indeed, he is. Like many other U.S. and Western officials and politicians, the United States president abandoned international and humanitarian laws altogether, even the law of his own country. The Leahy Law prohibits the U.S. Department of State and Department of Defense from providing military assistance to foreign security force units that violate human rights with impunity. Instead, he, like Blinken, subscribed to tribal affiliation and ideological notions, which simply added fuel to the fire. Though protected persons under international law, Palestinians seem dispensable, in fact, irrelevant to the point that their collective death appears critical for Israel to regain its deterrence and to protect itself, in the words of the Zionist regime's Minister of War, Yoav Gallant, against the human animals of Gaza. If there is a stronger word than hypocrisy, one would have used it, but for now, it would have to suffice. When the EU foreign policy chief, Joseph Borrell, was asked point blank in an Al Jazeera interview on November 20 about the violations of international law in Gaza, he offered two completely different answers. "I am not a lawyer," he said, when the legality of the Zionist regime's atrocities in Gaza were questioned. When the interviewer shifted to talk about Al-Aqsa flood, Borrell had no qualms about the issue. He said, "Yes, we consider that a war crime for killing civilians in this apparent way without any reason." This episode has not been repeated often in the US media simply because few mainstream media journalists are bothered, or more accurately, dare to question the Zionist regime's grisly behavior in the Gaza Strip. However, when such opportunities arose, the flagrant hypocrisy was impossible to hide. Marvel, for example, at Matthew Miller, spokesperson for the U.S. State Department, in response to rape allegations in both Gaza and Israel, when he was asked on February 18th about allegations of rape by the Zionist regime troops of Palestinian women In the Gaza Strip, his answer was that the U.S. has urged Israel to thoroughly and transparently investigate credible allegations. Compare this to his response to a question about unverifiable allegations of sexual assaults made by Palestinians against Israelis, although debunked even by the Zionist regime's own media. They have committed rape. We have no reason at all to doubt those reports, he said at a press conference on December 4th. Such examples are produced daily by hundreds of Western leaders, top officials, and media organizations. Even now, when the death toll has broken all records of brutality in recent human history, they still speak of the Zionist regime's right to defend itself, willfully ignoring the fact that the child killer regime of Israel has forfeited this right as soon as it engaged in this prolonged aggression starting in 1948. Indeed, international law on the rules of war and military occupation is situated within a framework notably laid out by the Fourth Geneva Convention that exists to defend the rights of the occupied, not the right of the occupier. This time-honored truth is obvious to the vast majority of humanity, save Washington and a few others, as dozens of envoys from around the world testified before the International Court of Justice from February 19th to 26th, protesting the Zionist regime's horrific violence, protracted occupation and racial system of apartheid. The United States sent its envoy to the highest court in the world to lobby for something else entirely, with the ironic title of acting legal advisor for the U.S. State Department. Richard Visick bizarrely urged the ICJ to ignore international law altogether. He said, "The court should not find that Israel is legally obligated to immediately and unconditionally withdraw from occupied territory." For far too long, but especially since October 7th, Western regimes, starting with the U.S. regime, have violated every last set of ethics, morality, and laws that they themselves developed, drafted, promoted, even imposed on the rest of the world for many decades. Currently, they are practically dismantling their own laws and the very ethical standards that led to their formation. Now that some Western leaders have begun to feel increasingly uncomfortable as the enormity of the Gaza genocide unfolds, a few, though bashfully, are declaring that Netanyahu may be going too far. Even so, not even an outright admission of responsibility would erase the fact that they are active participants in Netanyahu's killing campaign. When all is said and done, the blood of the horrifyingly high number of Palestinian victims will be shared equally between Tel Aviv, Brussels, London, Sydney, and all other genocide apologists. A crime of this magnitude will never be forgotten or forgiven.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to IRIB English Radio, where we explore the Islamic upbringing of children and teenagers, guided by the wisdom of the Quran and the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt. Today, we are honored to have Sister Salma Khalfan, a distinguished Islamic researcher, with us to shed light on this important subject. Salaamu alaikum, Sister Salma. Thank you for joining us today.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much for having me over.
Thank you so much for being here. So one of the questions we've got over here is that how can I make use of my age and youth? When I see the others, especially the older people who did nothing worthwhile in life and wasted their youth, their times in nonsensical and absurd things that did not provide them with a good future, I become more determined and tell myself that I do not want to be like them. But I don't know what to do or how I should begin and what the cause of my failure is or what the causes of failure are. If you could please show me the way.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Yes, this is a good thing to think about, I think. You know, like as we move along, and in fact, in our birthdays, we should be a bit sad that we have passed this 1 year. And let's just think about what we did during this 1 year.
Exactly.
How many people we made happy, how many people's hearts we broke, what substantial thing was done by us regarding ourselves, the society. Did we do things purely for the sake of Allah? How was our Laylatul Qadr? What things did Allah answer on that, you know, note? Or what things did we promise to do and we didn't do it properly? Or are we stagnant? Or have we moved? Have we done harakats? You know,
yeah.
All these things are very important to question in every point in life, in every birthday. So this youth has asked a very beautiful question. And in this youth, if he's so concerned, then I'm sure he'll reach great heights.
Yeah, definitely.
Inshallah, he just needs some kind of guidance and motivation that it's not at the end of life and you can have a lot, inshallah, and just to do the niyyah that now I'm going to embark on this procedure to make my life more fruitful. So first of all, there are three main factors that wastes one's time, age and good opportunities, and can make a person, you know, in the afterlife empty-handed, only to save with regret. So the first factor is in the individual himself. This youth should know that in yourself, regarding yourself, you should improve in these things. And it should, these things should not overtake you.
Yeah.
Living nervously.
Mm.
There's no need to live nervously. Am I right? Am I wrong? Find out the truth. Okay, be confident of yourself. Should I do this? Shouldn't I? Don't be confused. Seek for some advice. You know, so this wouldn't waste your time. If you live nervously, you will just remain stagnant. You would not take any step after that. So never live nervously. And then also being busy with trivial and unnecessary things. Don't waste your time in, for example, games or going with friends for long, long hours. Or, you know, like reading literature that is of no use, or watching movies to no end, one movie after the other, you know. There's no need for that. There should be a timetable in your life, in a youth's life, that what necessary things should they do during the day to make them feel fulfilled. The idle mind is the devil's workshop. You know, the devil will come and busy you with other things. So trivial and unnecessary things are no use.
Asant, we'll just take a quick break over here and we'll pick up from here shortly.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
So welcome back to IRIB English Radio, where we just had a very interesting question where youth was very concerned about, you know, how to go on with his life, not wanting to become like the people he saw who are, you know, who kind of failed in their life. And you said that there are many factors that could influence this, and, you know, a person should try and recall what they've done, you know, and try and seek to see what their progress can be in. And, you know, be confident, seek advice, you know, try not to be stagnant. These were very important points.
Yeah. And also another thing, living irregularly. There's no organization in your life. Even cleanliness itself is next to godliness. And nizafatu min al iman. If that is done, a motivation comes about, a good feeling comes about. So all these things contribute to your life. If you want to do something special, something great, and not want to waste just your life, you know, like those people whom this youth thinks about that they've wasted their life, and he fears that he doesn't want to waste his life. Living regularly with an organized time. If you pray every day on time, then you have to make sure that you do it even the next day, even the days to follow, so that this is like a good habit in you, inculcated as a good habit in you. So living regularly and organizing one's time will make him reach great heights. And then laziness will not make a person reach anywhere, or procrastinating, saying tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow. I want to embark on this. I want to work this. I want to read Quran, for example. I want to, you know, research on this topic. I want to study and, you know, read thoroughly about this topic. Or I want to do so and so. Or I want to work, but later on, later on. And there comes a time that you just don't feel like killing time out of unnecessary things, you know, like just being lazy. Laziness really prevents you from the great tasks of life and successes of life. It prevents you, just takes you away from those. There's so many hadiths relating to laziness that it will never bring success to a person.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate, especially when there is so much potential and Allah kind of is waiting to see you take a step so that he can, you know, help you.
Yes.
But unfortunately, we don't take that step and we still expect help. And when we don't get it, we get upset.
Yeah.
And we think that, you know, Allah is not there for us.
So laziness is one contributing factor to make you just ebb your life away out of laziness. So a person should always be active.
And you suddenly realize your years are gone.
Yes,
and, you know,
10 years just flew away. But what was left, you wanted to do this in life, you wanted to do that in life, but you didn't do anything.
True.
Another thing that takes you away from this success is curiosity and interfering in people's affairs. You know, people's affairs, what, I mean, you have to see your own affairs and there could be no end to it. Like Rumi, a poet, says that if we knew our mistakes, we'd never look at other people's mistakes. They're so never-ending.
Yeah.
Our mistakes are so never-ending, our faults. But because we judge ourselves through our thoughts and people through their actions, you should try to be so united that even, like, always give the benefit of the doubt to people.
True.
And not let you to be inquisitive of people's affairs. Why so-and-so is like this? Why not me? Why so? Comparisons and... Be on your own track. Pay attention to, of course, the people and their needs and offer service to them. But don't be curious or interfering in people's affairs. You leave your own affair undone.
Yeah.
And then also having poor information of the necessary issues of life. Like, you know that the necessary issue of your life is, for example, you have to pass through your life in such a way that you have to choose a good partner to get married to, and to, for example, find the right criteria to choose a spouse, and then when to have the children, your offsprings, and then what to do about it, you know, in future, how to go about life, like whether you want to work or you want to study, all these things, you have to have so much information. These are the necessary issues of life. Or how to practice your religion. This is very important. So you have to have the information of all these things.
Exactly.
And then you get to pass your life in a qualitative manner. And then also loneliness and little association with the society. This will also make you not feel that feeling of success. Allah wants you to integrate yourself, feel less loneliness and more association with the society. Society should be one body of unity, close-knit to one another, so that we can progress together.
Yeah.
Everybody needs each other in one way or the other. And of course, for the waiting for Imam Zamana's Zuhur, we need to be that one body.
Inshallah, inshallah. So let's just take a quick break and pick up from here.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, be like a friendly physician who applies medicine where it is useful.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
Welcome back to IRIB English Radio, where we have just been discussing about a very interesting question where somebody was asking what they should do to make sure that they have a bright future. And you mentioned very important things. You said that, sometimes we kind of waste our time in, thinking about others' mistakes, talking about others' mistakes, being very curious, having poor information about very important and necessary issues. And at times, loneliness and little association, we just try to think that we want to be on our own, not realizing that it is in our innate nature to want to be around people, and that will actually help us, in our path.
That's right, absolutely. Another thing is that always not being able to make decisions yourself. This is very important for youth to make his own decisions.
Yeah.
Sometimes he sees that there's some conflict around him, even the family. But he has to know that what he wants to do is for his own good in life. So he has to take this decision, right? For example, he wants to study a certain subject and the parents are forcing him to study another subject.
Yeah.
He has to make the firm very politely tell the parents that I'm not interested in this subject. I could be more, useful for the society and for myself also and for my future in this field. So, and he should embark in that field. And most parents do give that opportunity to their adolescent youths to decide what career they want to have.
Yeah.
So to make that decision is very important. Or to make the decision that you're not just, carried away with the wind. Whoever leads you astray, okay, go with them. Whoever is colorful and bright, go along them.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make a decision which friend is good for you,
yeah,
which friend is not good for you, which gathering to attend, which gathering not to attend. What is useful for your time, what is useless for your time. To make a decision is very important.
Yeah, and I think that mainly happens when you have a clear goal. When you don't have that clear goal, you don't even know why you've made these mistakes.
And also information, as you pointed out.
Yeah.
To get proper information about important issues of life.
Yeah,
then you can make proper decisions also in the end.
Then you know that the reason you didn't do well was because of, shortcomings of your own actions. You at least know that you had something to go on, with.
That's right, yeah.
But when you don't have anything, you just are going on and then you realize you don't even know where you're going.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you realize, oh, that's why I made these mistakes. So
that's right. And also planning the future. You have to plan your future in the sense that you don't have to look make your aspirations so high. The way, tulil amal, no. But plan your future in the sense that, you know where you want to, for example, which place you want to live in, how you want to bring up your children, what you want your life to be, what career you want to undertake, what you want to reach, where your goal is. You know, that planning the future is very important. In the next 10 years, I want to do these things. I have to accomplish these tasks. Then, there'll be a kind of thing that you have done, rather than say that my life is wasted at the end.
And it gives that motivation.
It gives that motivation. And also, if you are strong in your determination, you'll be able to make all those things happen.
Definitely.
So you wouldn't have wasted your own life. Now, this is as per himself. The second factor is the individual and others around him. How he should be with others around him so that his life will be fulfilling.
Ahsant. Inshallah. So maybe we can continue on this in the next episode. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we hope to see you in the next episode.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
The
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 31 meters, 9650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
Thank you. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.